Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. It's February, that's a bit of an improvement, isn't it? I've seen some daffodils come up, and not just because I'm half Welsh, is that a joy to see. Spring is coming, which is giving me some hope. Thank you so much for your amazing comments on last week's episode. If you haven't listened yet to Ruth Coker Burks, I can't recommend it enough. What the most incredible woman she was. If you did enjoy the episode, you can rate that episode specifically if you liked it, or just rate the show or subscribe. All those things really help me continue to do the show massively. And if the smallest thing you can do is tell someone else about it in an episode that you enjoyed, that is also extremely helpful. Thank you if you've done that already. I really, really genuinely appreciate it, especially in these cold, dark times. It's nice to know that talking to a microphone is helping. This week is a special live episode. We recorded this back in September at the amazing King's Place in London. It seems so strange that we were allowed to be in a room together at that point and have an audience that we're allowed to be together. That happened not that long ago, but it seems miles away now. I was joined, as ever, by the live episodes by three brilliant comedians, Sarah Pascoe, Darren Harriott and Athena Klebenu. Just to give it a little bit of a trigger warning, in this episode we talk a lot about suicide. Darren actually lost his father to suicide. He talks about it very explicitly, and I just want to mention he does even talk about how his dad took his own life, so if that's something that you're sensitive to, please be aware we do go into that in detail. But it is, as ever, a joy to talk to comedians about death and grief and all the silly things that we all think along the way, and I hope you enjoy it. Please put your hands together and remember, give them a big wave when you come on, because you can't do woos, for my guests this evening, Sarah, Darren and Athena. Just choose a seat, I don't mind. You sit there, that's fine.
I should probably announce I drank way more red wine backstage.
I'm sorry, Athena. This is not what a pregnant woman wants to hear.
Yeah. I'm grieving properly now.
Yeah. I, as someone who recently had a baby, can understand. It's nothing more irritating than people being like, "Are you not drinking?" You're like, "No, obviously I'm." Obviously.
No, I'm not a psychopath. Like, no, I'm not drinking. I love my child. It's my unborn.
Yeah, drinking. The worst is when you get a drunk woman who's like, "I drank and it's fine. You should have some." You think, "Oh, I don't know.
It's always Guinness. That's what I always hear. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There is something that isn't there. Pregnant women can drink half a Guinness, right?
But also, pregnant women can drink a little bit if they want to.
Oh, controversial.
No, I think they can.
Do you know what there is? I know this. There's actually no
they can't put proof as to what it does.
Yeah.
So because they don't want to tell people that, because some people will be like, well, there's no proof.
Well, they know that,
today,
yeah.
They just say no.
They know that if you're an alcoholic, that has like it's incredibly bad.
Welcome to Alcohol Cast.
And drinking regularly is bad. But what they haven't proved is if you have a glass of wine a week, anything happens.
Look, there was some free wine.
But I don't want to bet. If you're up the duff and you're having a drink tonight, enjoy it. That's what, that's what I was trying to say. Let's all just live our own lives.
Yes. Absolutely. If you want to, that's fine.
Some people drink and then they get pregnant.
That's true. That's one way to do it. Anyway, we did have some free wine. I hope you guys had. Did they let you have some wine? No, you don't have. Oh my God, you're joking. Oh, this is awful. Okay, so that everyone is in Athena's position right
exactly,
now.
Exactly. You're all on my side. Thank
you're
you.
All on the side.
We'll talk sense. Let these free chats. Drunk stuff.
I just like. Yeah.
Sorry, I just like. You'd be allowed some.
I just like how Carrot keeps saying, "We all had some free wine," as if that makes it better. It was free, guys.
That's what I'm going to tell my husband.
We couldn't
later.
Help ourselves.
It was free. It was free. I can't deal with the baby. I'm not responsible. That's a really good one to do when you are drunk and you come home drunk. You don't have to do the nappy changes. anyway, we're here to talk about grief and death, guys. Come on, let's not have too much fun. So, Sarah, do you often think about grief or death? Is it something that preoccupies you or not really?
Yes, I think I think in a quite healthy way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're my best friend. You're got a whole grief brand.
Yeah.
And so I have someone I can talk to about it. I think I have a healthy thing about death, which is in terms of counting your blessings and the things that happen when you are well, or if you've lost somebody or somebody close to you has lost somebody, that thing of reassessing how lucky you are. And both of my parents are still alive, and I always feel very grateful for that. And so awareness of death, I don't think
but
I hide
worry.
From it.
You're not somebody's like, am I going to die today, are you? You're not like neurotic.
My husband, whenever he gets a very, very slight thing, is the kind of person who Googles and then thinks he has cancer. Yeah. And so I'm the other balance. Well, I'm going, I'm never going to die.
Yeah, I was going to say, you are also quite, what's the word? Like,
immortal.
You'll be like, oh, yeah, you do think you're immortal, which yeah. is... I don't know if that completes the circle.
But while
I mean?
I'm alive, I am, you see.
That's true. Athena, this is a different, like, are you, because you're pregnant. When I was pregnant, my death anxiety was much, much worse. I was thinking about it all the time. Are you in that stage at the moment? Or
no,
are you cool?
not at all. I don't think, no.
I hope I haven't made it.
I'm totally optimistic about you. I think about it in quite a scientific way, actually, which is a bit sterile, but you know, you look up statistics, don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there are really horrible statistics about black women in pregnancy, for example.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think about that in terms of my care, like what do we need to do, but not in terms of worrying. I think of it in terms of like planning, you know?
That's tough. Yeah, that's really tough.
Yeah, but I think that's just a personality thing too. I'm very accepting of how things are. So it's like, oh, a doctor might not believe me if I'm in pain. So I'll just scream a bit louder.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's the way I think about it. But generally, you're so, you know, I'm just so grateful to be knocked up. You know, let's face it. It's a cool thing. Yeah, you know, I'm very lucky. Yeah. I'm very blessed. So I try, it's very hard for me to be really somber about it, even though I do think about my first childbirth was awful. I lost all this blood and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that I wasn't close to death, but it was horrible. So once you've done that, you sort of think, well, what's the worst that can happen? Because that was pretty bad.
It's Athena is second time round. Again, if you are pregnant first time, don't worry. It's going to be fine. It will be horrible as well. It will be horrible.
And you know what will take the edge off? A nice glass of wine.
You know what's weird? Because when they're giving you the morphine, they don't offer the wine.
Oh, that's because morphine is wine times 100.
Yeah, let me tell you.
That's
second time round, I was like, I... all the morphine. First time I was like, no, it's fine, just 2 paracetamol to me. Second time I was like, can I have more? And they said, you've had enough morphine. They were like, enough. Darren, is it something that worries you particularly, or are you just kind of not focused on it in your everyday?
I mean, I'm in a bit of a weird place. Yeah, I'm obsessed with death.
Oh, yes. That's my kind of boy.
So, quick history. My dad committed suicide when I was 11.
Oh,
and ever since then, I think about suicide all the time. Mm. I can't get it out of my head. It's I probably need to go to a therapist.
have you not gone to therapy?
Nah,
ever?
Nah, I've got that.
Has anyone in your family?
No, very sort of, I mean, well, I know working class people.
Yeah.
That's a reference to when we were drinking the free wine. no one's ever done therapy in my family. They all sort of grit through things. You just keep working, keep your head down, shut up. But I I've been through the I think we as when you're comedians, you sort of do comedy and it kind of keeps you occupied. It's like a, you know, mild mood stabilizer. And like, I think that, especially with, you know, stuff that I do in my career and all that, it's fine, but it's not that thing. When I think of suicide, I go, oh, fucking hell. Hello. It's pretty sad. But I've got to that point where I think my big worry is that when my dad killed himself, he was 35.
Mm, how old are you?
And I've just turned 32.
Oh, that is very common, worrying about that age.
Right?
Yeah.
So I sit there and I go, biggest killer of men under 40 is suicide. Okay. I don't see myself dying any other way than killing myself.
Mm. Really?
100%. Like if tomorrow the doctor said to me, I've got cancer and I've got 2 months to live, I would just kill myself. Because I see myself as killing myself anyway. So I'd be like, okay, it answers everything. This is why I do comedy.
Yeah. Are you quite controlling in other ways? Because I think it must be such a thing of like, that's how I take charge of a situation that I'm not in control of.
Completely, yeah. So a thing that I often struggled with was where I remember when my dad died. Obviously, my dad died in March 2000. So I was 11. I started secondary school, big school in September.
Yeah.
So when you start that, you're occupied. It's school, puberty, you're getting to know what you want to do with your life, all sorts of stuff. So I was very sort of busy. And then I went to college, dropped out of college, hated college. And then I saw a flyer for like an open mic comedy thing. And I thought to myself, I'm really depressed because now I'm just free. I'm not studying. And then I got into comedy and I've been doing comedy since I was like 18. And that's kept me busy. But as I'm getting older, I'm getting to that point where I'm like, okay, none of it's making me happy.
Yeah. Well, the classic thing, I lost my dad when I was 15, but to cancer. And the classic thing with a young griever is that it doesn't hit you till 30.
Is it?
Yeah, which I didn't know until I started like doing a show about death on a regular basis. But basically what's quite common is when you're young, you just can't process it. Yeah. Just can't process it. So you just kind of carry on. And then your 20s, you kind of do stupid things.
Yeah.
And then you hit 30, you're like, hang on a minute. Maybe it's connected to that massive thing that happened to me, but it takes such a long time because you were such a young person to actually, and I think
it's so interesting because what you're describing is coping.
Yeah, yeah.
Because actually what you're saying is a young person copes, you cope, your 20s, you push your parameters to coping, and then 30s is processing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like you're putting it off, you're actually, I think that's probably the only thing you can do is something so massive.
Yeah, and that's difficult. I always thought I wasn't coping. I always thought, I'm not doing it very well, am I? I'm just like ignoring it. Or I'm not going to. I didn't go to therapy until I was like way into my 30s. So I was like, what would I say? How do we do this? And then I think actually what I realized was like, it was just a way of coping. But at the time I was like, I think everyone else is probably dealing with this a bit better than I am. And I'm just not talking about it. And then I thought, do a podcast. But I talk about it every single week. And then I couldn't move from it. And then it was like, I found that really helpful. But I think it's very common not to have had any therapy, especially when it happens to you under 20.
It helped me a lot with stand-up because I was just talking about it on stage and then mentioning it, and then you sort of get you. So like, you know, I've been on dates before. I'm sure we've all had this where we're just far too open. We're too used to it. But you can see that they're like, but I'm like, oh no, it's fine. Yeah. like it's okay. It's just a thing that sort of.
Why are you crying? It didn't happen to you.
Oh, I've ruined this day, haven't I? Oh. But what am I like?
Do you feel that, like, do you feel any way about it becoming material? Do you know what I mean? Because it's one thing doing therapy on stage, but this is entertainment, right? We're entertaining people. How does that make you feel?
I think I have drained a lot of that comedy material well with it. When you do Edinburgh. The only reason I say that is because I started to realize that people were talking about USPs in comedy, which always sort of thing that kind of makes me sick whenever someone's like, I just don't know what my USP is in comedy.
That's the new generation, by the way. In the old days, we're just like...
Why is there
smoking
all these,
outside.
Why is there a woman hosting? That was what's going on here? Yeah, USP or unique selling point. And someone said to me, oh, well, your dad killed himself in prison. And I was like,
Who said that to you?
Just like a friend. Just like when we said, he said, yeah, but people know that. I'm like, yeah, but that's not.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise. People say really awful things about death.
Heard it so many times. Oh, your dad killing himself. Yeah. You've got the dead dad story for Edinburgh. Yeah, go ahead, Darren.
I'll tell you something. It's the bravest thing in the world to put yourself out there
okay, let's be real, there can be a benefit because people, but that's because people want to hear your story.
Yeah, exactly.
And it helps people.
Sometimes I think, and I think it's people who haven't been through stuff that they can make a comment like that. They don't really understand what they're messing with. They don't understand the world they're talking about, which, you know, fair enough. Some people haven't experienced these things. But what it negates is that how you communicated that story. Because things happen to all sorts of people. It's getting up, being brave, being emotional, and communicating what happened to you, making that a show that connects with people.
Of course, that's why lawyers chase ambulances, but not comedy promoters.
Exactly. Because otherwise it would be like, great, oh, everyone's got a story.
Yeah, I just hang around in the graveyard signing people up to the gilded balloon.
And how did he go? How did he go? Yeah, I think you're not going to get an hour up that, actually. Maybe start with 10 minutes. That's what I mean is, like, it negates the idea of how much it takes to communicate that story.
I think, like, I, especially during the whole lockdown, I realised how much I actually owe to just doing comedy because I definitely, if I wasn't doing comedy, definitely would have, like, it's easy to say you would have killed yourself. I would have definitely tried a few times early. Mm. I nearly did when I was 26, and then I moved to London because I was just so depressed. And but I think for me, starting at around 17 when I went to do comedy and 18, and then it was just this massive change in like lifestyle because I was this depressed kid, angry, sad about his dad, starting comedy, obviously terrible doing open mics. But then I'm in car shares with like 45-year-old white guys who are married with kids, and I'm an 18-year-old guy who used to want to be a rapper, and I'm hearing their life stories and what they've, and I'm like, oh, and some of them, I'm like, oh, actually, you came out of this all right. Like, you did well with you, and you know, some of them went through horrible stuff or whatever, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I think that helped me a lot in the early years of just being lost, was like, being around, because everybody was older than me. If you do any sort of performance art when you're like 18, especially like, well, particularly comedy, everyone's older. Everybody drove, they had kids, we'd go all over the place. And I really felt like an adult much more because I was hearing such adult shit. Like some of these people, you know, like they own house, they had like a house. They were, you know, my mom still doesn't own a house. I was like, whoa, you own your own house, it's awesome. And then like, they would talk about their kids and their wives or their husbands and stuff, and it really helped me. And then I just got to a point where after doing all that, I kind of just felt really like worthless again, very similar to how I felt when I was in college. And then I was about to kill myself, and then I was like, instead I'll just kill my bank balance and just went to London instead. Just made the move to London, and it's really helped me. But I'm never far away. Like, I don't know a day goes by where I'm not like, kill myself.
It must be so strange if you know that is a way out. It's like life must have a different exit door, like something extra that if someone hasn't had a close experience of someone that they know who
I wonder as well, maybe this is a stupid thing to say, but like I always think everything's cancer and I assume I will die by cancer. And I like, again, my husband, both his parents died of cancer. So we are like,
it's what's familiar to you.
Yeah, we're very stressed whenever something is like, I think it's cancer, do you think you should get checked? Like we've been checked so many times for so many things. And I think it's just, you know, so I have terrible death anxiety because I lost someone very young, and it makes you think, well, this can happen, it can happen. And my therapist was saying to me, you know, but it was just, it doesn't happen every day. You're like, yeah, but I do have a really good example of when it did happen, when someone did have cancer and it wasn't cool. So I think, especially when you're young, anything that happens to you in that sort of formative age, when you are a bit of a blob and you're not quite a person yet, it burns you, doesn't it? You think, oh, that's how things happen. Like you said, like, suicide is not an option for you, but it's close enough to you to go, okay,
you can't close off that, you know that it happens.
It almost feels like, you know, in Indiana Jones when there's that ball chasing him and he's running away, but it's almost like if you turn around, the ball's probably not there, but you think it is.
Do
you want to know what my most comforting thought is? It's so sad. My most comforting thought, and I've had this thought for years, is it's pitch black. It's almost like a dream sometimes. It's pitch black. I'm on my knees and there's a gun pointing to my head. But I don't know who's holding the gun. And he's holding the gun against my head. I'm guessing it's a man. I can't tell, but it's someone holding the gun. And I just go,
oh. A Oh, wow.
Like, I was like, ah.
I think that's so interesting because as a controlling person, that's the complete absence of control relaxes you. You should have therapy.
I know.
They literally go, brilliant. Let's go. Let's spend 2 months.
Me and Sarah Athena are like, we're ready already. Like, we're settling
have you
in.
All, have
like,
you all had therapy as well?
I've never had therapy, but it is something I'm open to. I've just never, I've never kind of gone down that road. I've heard how much it costs as well. So I'm just like, I'd rather pay my bills.
Someone told me as well that you can hate your therapist.
Oh yeah.
I thought a therapist was like a doctor. You just it's a doctor, they know best. But no, you can have a therapist you just don't like and you get someone else.
And also, this is what I'd say, and this is because it's a wider discussion for anyone listening, and also, like, I mean, it's not easy, but you can get therapy on the NHS. Like, it doesn't have to, because it shouldn't be something that isn't accessible to everyone, and it's shit that it does. It can be quicker or easier.
Especially at the moment, obviously, the services are very underfunded. But I was lucky enough to get NHS therapy a few years ago. And again, they were like, oh, there's a massive waiting list. And I was like, I've been waiting since I was 15. Like, it's fine. Yeah. I was like, a year and a half. And then they finally rang. And I was like, they were like, oh, do you still want it? I was like, yeah, still got the old issue with the death of my father. So that's fine.
I was just going to say that, just to go back to that point. So a therapist isn't cleverer than you and they're not magic. It's work you do yourself. Yeah. Like going to, if you were going to go and work out in the gym, it isn't how good your trainer is. It's how open you are.
Yeah.
And you hear yourself talk. You hear your own patterns. When you commit to a long time, what happens is sometimes the same things happen in your life again in a different scenario, and that's a really interesting one. You go, oh, I did this, we did this before,
but they will have a smug face when that happens. They do go, this is reminding me a little bit of last year, and you're like, yes, I know it is, thank you. Yeah, you don't have to like them though, definitely. I mean, sometimes
they're not your friend and they don't laugh at your jokes if you're a comedian. Yeah. No,
that's the most
they laugh afterwards though, they piss their pants. Oh my god, they just wait till you leave.
Somebody I interviewed the other day, which I hadn't thought of, she was like, oh, all therapists hate their client. They just think you're an idiot that can't solve your own problem. And I thought, oh God, I thought mine actually liked me. I thought, how pathetic of me that I kind of thought she liked me. And I was like, no, she doesn't. And we also have this really weird situation where I don't know. Hey, if you're listening, I don't know if she listens. So I always say,
they're not allowed to.
No, but they must be allowed.
No, they're not allowed to. They're not allowed to, like, I mean, if you're not allowed to watch you on TV, they're not allowed to read your books.
Well, she'd be struggling with you, wouldn't she, sir? To change the channel.
So I had to leave. I was too famous. QI. She couldn't avoid my stuff.
But it's all good because I'll sometimes be like, oh, you know, I have this podcast. And I won't talk, I won't discuss it because I don't want to go like into it. Or I'll be like, oh, I've got a gig and a thing because I find it really awkward. And then one time she said to me, like, why won't you discuss it properly? And I was like, because I just feel like, just felt really icky to be like, so I've got this gig at King's Place. So I just kind of, and also I don't want her to know that I talk about her. I also talk about her a lot on the show, which I think she would probably quite like. Oh, really? Part of me thinks she'd be like, yeah. And I often quote her. And I think, what's the ethics of that? Do I need to pay her? Again? Like, how comes?
Oh, can I ask Darren a question?
Yes.
So because I've got a friend who does comedy whose dad killed himself, and the comedy and what happened to her, her family experience are really connected, because when one of her parents was so sad for such a long time, being able to use humour almost in a way... she's so programmed and conditioned to go to that place because there was already too much of the opposite. So do you think that was similar for you?
Yeah, I think definitely when I started high school, I think because I couldn't talk to my family about, even with my dad's death, I never sat down with my mom and went, Mom, you know, dad is very sure. It's just, we never really talked about emotions. You know, the sort of how we love each other, but we never said it. My mom loves me. I love her. I love my, we know that, but we just don't say it. Yeah. So like, I think when I went to high school, immediately it was just like, you've got to be funny, forget about it, make loads of friends. And that was like the number one thing for me. And then I think, I literally remember doing my first show, being outside the venue, obviously nervous as you all are when you do your first show, looking at a picture of my dad, just thinking like, what? This is what should I do it? Should I not do it? I always remember that when I was 18. And I think now that I'm getting older and I'm thinking more about my life, I'm like, okay, do I want kids? Kids is like a massive thing for me, because my worry is I don't want to kill myself and have my kids be like me.
Go through what you went through.
I can't have kids because I can't promise that I'm not going to kill myself at some point. Because I know that, you know, you love your kids and all that. But I know that my dad loved me, but he still decided this was the best bet. So I don't, So that's I think that's probably the biggest struggle that I'm having now, is that now in my 30s, I'm like, okay, I'm not against kids. It would be fun to have kids. I think people grow. I'm getting to that point where I think that, you know, I won't be the person I'm supposed to be until I have kids. It's a real test of like who I'm supposed to be. But I can't promise I'm not going to kill myself. But I can't do it, man.
I think you're putting too much pressure on it, actually, because if you say that killing yourself is something that is constantly with you, then that isn't going to stop. But it also doesn't interfere with your plans, your future, and the fact how much you love those children. And I think in a way it will give you another insight into your dad, because you will be a dad yourself, and part of that might be like incredibly, incredibly sad. But killing yourself is such an illogical thing. You can't go, oh, I won't do it to my children, because we all know the people that did it is because of absolute desperation. It's not a logical place.
Go on, Athena.
No, children change you in ways that are entirely unpredictable. Like, you think it's really easy to say, oh, they change your life, but you have no idea whether they change your life in a good way or in a bad way. There's literally no way to predict.
People are talking to some parents.
Someone's like, yeah, he's a little rascal. No, but it's, you know, I mean, like, emotionally, like, I'll tell you something really funny. So I've got a twin brother, and he had a baby on the same day as that I had a baby.
Oh,
isn't that mad?
God.
It's mad, isn't it? But what was really interesting as like a social experiment is how we both responded to it. Mm. So I won't lie, I was great. Do you know what I mean? I was like, it's easy, you know? But, you know, him and his partner, I won't go into detail because it's their business, but, you know, they went through stuff to deal with finally becoming parents. I put that down to them being in a very sort of heteronormative situation, thinking, we're going to have kids, it'll be great, and not doing the work. Whereas with me at the time, I was on my own in my mum's spare room. So I was like, I got to organize myself. So I put so much work into being a good parent. I did all this prep. So the baby was there, and I was like, I'm ready. But they just thought they was ready because society said, oh, you man, woman, house, you're ready. They clearly weren't. So what I'm saying to you is get therapy, because you don't know. You just don't know. It's really easy to say, oh, you'll have a baby and you'll want to be alive for it. Actually, sometimes, you know, what happens, I mean, it wasn't, you know, my brother, you know, they diagnosed him with postnatal depression, men can get it too, you know. So this is like, but I would never have guessed.
I would never have guessed that would happen.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, I talk about that a lot on the show, of the having a baby, my first baby was the closest I've ever felt to grieving. Like, I couldn't believe how similar it was. And someone actually messaged me beforehand and was like, oh, just to warn you, it will be like grief. And I was like, what a horrible thing to say to a woman about to have a baby. Like, how insensitive. And then when it happened, I was like, thank you for warning me, because what you're dealing with is is a brand new presence that wasn't there, and it's really weird, like your whole life has to shift around them, and when someone dies, it's you're left with that hole, that massive, massive hole, and it brings up a lot of stuff. But the other thing that happened to me was, I was talking to someone who nearly, this guy had kids and he nearly died. I think he was in hospital and they didn't know he had sepsis, and then, you know, it was all very last minute, and he was giving me a big speech about like, oh my God, if I had died, like my children, I wouldn't have seen them, you know, walk down the aisle. I wouldn't have seen them go to university. And I was like standing there thinking, I mean, that is my life. Like, my dad didn't see that. And what I found strange was I was like, oh, his worst nightmare is my life. And I was like, oh. And I thought, yeah, obviously I am someone whose dad died at 15. It was painful and difficult, but I am also, there are positives to that situation. Like, I'm okay. I don't spend every day wailing and screaming. And I thought it's important to, what I find with grief, and this has only happened thanks to therapy TM, we do recommend it on the grief cast. I think it's enabled me to see it, to hold both things at the same time, of like what happened to me when I was young was awful and horrible and so painful, but also other things happened and I am okay and I got through it, and there's a myriad of things, like you said, with you and comedy that perhaps wouldn't have happened, and you wouldn't have found it so quickly, you wouldn't have been searching for it, you wouldn't have needed that rescue, you would have been perhaps more meandering for a long, you just don't know.
It's clearly given you like a bravery.
Yeah.
And I know you don't want to look to negatives and go, oh, here's like the thing we talk about, those glib comments earlier about you going, oh, you're lucky that happened. It's not to be glib, but it's just, it did happen. But it's the strength of people.
That
as part of it.
But I think also just like, I just feel like it happened. Like, obviously, if you could press a button and undo a death, you know, there's times when obviously I wish I could have a conversation with him. But I can't comprehend that. I can't comprehend that world.
Can I ask you a question that really bothers me?
Go for it.
But But I think about it and I go, but I wonder, just because you were older when your dad died, can you still remember your dad's voice?
No, and it really, really bugs me.
It kills me.
Really bugs me.
The last time I spoke to my dad, it was on the phone.
Yeah.
And it was in a prison phone, but I didn't know at the time, I was 11. And it was very much a final last call. Like, he already had it in his mind, he was going to kill himself. It was like, you know, be good, work hard, study, make sure you look after your mom and your brother. Is your brother in? My brother was playing football. At the time, it wasn't in. I said, yeah, dad, when are you going to come see? All that sort of stuff. And I think about that call all the time. Just wish I could hear his voice. Yeah, I know we just had like a proper Brummy accent. That's what I know. Like, he had a proper, right, Darren, don't worry. It'd be something like that. But it bothers me. I wish I recorded it.
Mine went, and we had him on a dictaphone. That's where we kept him. And and then we lost the dictaphone tapes. Because I remember being about 18 and going into the old office and finding it and pressing play and being like, oh God, because his voice, and it was saying something really banal, like, oh, send a letter to the accountant about, and I was like, oh God. And what's hard, I think, when you lose someone young is you think, well, how would I ever forget that? Of course I remember his voice, and it's gone, until I had something happen in lockdown where I heard it, and I just had a baby, so I don't know if that was like, I was still in the realms of morphine. Perhaps I was still enjoying myself. But I just heard this voice and I didn't recognize it at first. I was like, who's that? And I thought, oh my God, that's what he sounded like. Wow. But I have been like moaning about not having it for like 4 years. So maybe he has got the memo. Because I think it's one of those things when you lose someone, when you are really still a child, that you can't tell that child what they need to remember.
Yes.
Because you're just so upset and you're so sad and you don't know
what's
happening.
Well, I was going to say on the other side, Carrie Ed knows this, my cousin died last year and she's a couple of years older than me, so obviously no age at all to die. And her son is 11. And it's the third time she'd had breast cancer, and this time she was definitely going to die. And actually, all of the things we did, so having known Carrie Ed, one of the things I did, and actually neither of them really wanted to do it, Jane because she was dying, and also Ryan, her son. So I got Jane to leave lots of recordings for Ryan, for this thing about the voice. And I'm like, and I had a list of like, okay, useful moments, when he passes his GCSEs, when he's this, we did get some, but we had to stop because Jane found it very upsetting. But also, Ryan doesn't want to hear them. Like, for him, right now, this, someone else coming and going, this is really good grief work. And he's like, he's actually just like, I just want to make friends at school, like, deal with my life.
They will benefit from that so much. I've already recorded my nan and my mom already. Yeah. I've already started uncles and that. Luckily, I had a show on Radio 4. And they wanted little interviews with my family, and I purposely did an hour and a half with everyone. So I've got like I've got everyone. I've literally got my nan talking about when she came to the Black Country from Jamaica in the 60s and what it was like. I'm like, yes, that's going to look so good.
But it's like now, like, what grief looks like for people is just so much changed because of social media. And in some ways, it's kind of gone in the other direction where you're just inundated with people who've passed away. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I knew someone who passed away just died, one of those ones just dropped dead. Could never predicted it. And he's everywhere. He's everywhere. He's on social media, he's on Twitter, you know, and it's...
You get reminded of their birthday on Facebook.
Oh. Like,
those things that, because people still exist and no one thinks, I'll go into all of their logins and stop that.
Well, you can
happening.
Nominate someone for Facebook to deal with your account, which you can go on now, and they will nominate someone. If you die, they will be in charge of your Facebook account. So it's worth doing, guys, because you never know. It's someone with death anxiety.
Yeah, I should do that.
But it's a good one to do. But I agree with you, Athena, that it's weird. So my dad died in 1998. So we are that time where like memories are very precious, because like if you Google him, nothing comes up. Because I did one day.
Done that a few times.
Yeah, I was like, what happened?
Tap my dad's full name in. Yeah, done everything. Nothing comes up. I'm like, that's so strange.
And it's really weird. Whereas I speak to people now who have WhatsApp messages, voicemail messages, the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram.
Your iPhone does things from memories. So it'll go, this day 2 years ago, or this day 4 years ago. Yeah. So stuff just constantly
exists. It's like
Black
Mirror, that episode where they build a person based on their social media trail. Do you remember episode from like season 1 or something? And it's almost like, is that, how healthy is that?
Sarah, have you had any thoughts of your funeral? Have you got anything you want?
I did think about it because I got married last year and I didn't have a wedding, so I think I'm not going to have a funeral.
That's what Catherine Ryan said.
Did she? Yeah, she That's why we're friends because we get our attention at work.
She said, throw my body in a bag at the site. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
It's a bit how I feel. And I know it is for other people, not for me. And then that's what feels really like arrogant. Like, what would I put on for them? Just everyone get Deliveroo in your own house.
That is how we would honour you.
Raise a glass of wine from the garage.
That would be a very fitting honour of you to get Deliveroo by, and be in.
Yeah.
I'd be like, this is what she would have wanted,
guys.
Would
want it,
Athena, have you had any thoughts for your funeral?
Yeah, for sure. I'm the opposite. So I'd rather have a bigger funeral than a tiny wedding. I'm super shy. Oh, so I don't, you know, the idea of getting married, like, kiss my partner, but my mum. Yeah. I'm sick. We like when we go to her house, we're like, he's on one end of the couch, I'm on the other end. I'm just super shy about stuff like that. So I'd love to have a big funeral. I do want to go fund me just to see how much it'll raise. You know what I mean? Just to see.
I've
got two kids, you know.
Oh, people, yeah.
So that would be fun, just for the banter. Just for bants. But a big celebration. I always believe that, like, when people are ashamed of their age, I think it's mad. Mm. You know, when you go to a gig and someone says, oh, it's my birthday, and you say, how old are you? And they don't want to say, I'm like, fucking tell me your age. Yeah. You're alive.
Yeah. You got a big, you know what I mean? You got a big sash on. Yeah. Yeah. I want to see your age.
And so, in the same way, like, for me passing away, I want people to be happy that I lived, I grew my locks. You know what I'm saying? Like, I gave birth to like two kids. I met a dude and I thought I'd do that because men are interesting.
I thought he was going to say trash though.
Interesting, Darren. You're just interesting.
I was going to agree.
I've done, you know, you put my name to Google, shit comes up.
Yeah,
that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice.
So it's obviously, you know, if it was to happen tomorrow, it would be premature. Yeah. But just come, enjoy, eat some food, dance, have a nice time, and go PayPal the fund me. Yeah, why not?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. Darren, what do you want? Have you got it planned?
Yeah, I thought about my funeral quite a bit. When you think of killing yourself this often, you really do. It all depends. To be fair, it kind of all depends on how I die. Mm-hmm. So back in my early days, I used to think about jumping in front of a train. My worry was, if I jump in front of a train, mess up my face, can't have an open casket.
Do you want an open casket?
I think about it a lot.
Do you?
The problem is, I always remember my dad's open casket.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And my dad's open casket was, so my dad had dreadlocks all the way down to his like backside. But just before when he really was going through like schizophrenia, shaved it all off. Mm. At the time, I thought it was fucking awesome. Dad's like, slap it. But really, it was because he was just going crazy.
Yeah,
and
he
a big load of hair is the last thing you probably want when you feel like you're being chased or whatever. And I always remember him in the casket because they asked my brother if he wanted to go. And my brother was like, no. He was, you know, and I said, oh, yeah. And I can't get that image of him out of my face.
Yeah, that's so common.
Yeah, it didn't really look like the dad I remember.
Yeah.
On his tombstone, they've got a picture of him. And it's him with the dreadlocks and the smile. Hey, I'm like, ah, that's dad.
Yeah.
So there is a part of me that thinks that. But I do know I definitely 100% want to be cremated.
Oh, really?
Do not bury me at all. Because I just know that, like, to everyone here, all of your loved ones, you've maybe got, think about the person you love the most. If they die tomorrow, they've maybe got 30 years of you visiting their grave. And then after then, my dad's been dead 20 years. I visit every now and again. I don't want that. I've been to graves around December time at Christmas, and you can really tell the fresh pots.
Yeah, yeah, you can always tell the flowers. Yeah.
Merry Christmas. I'm like, oh, they're going to have to come back in 2 weeks. Look at them. They've got to do a shift. And like, you can always tell the ones where they don't visit anymore.
Yeah, but then when you get to the 100-year-old grave and it's very romantic and it's all covered in moss, so you just have to wait for a good time for a grave.
Yeah, but I also think it's super expensive. I'm very easy. I'm kind of like you. I want to party. They can talk about my life, talk about what I've done, all that sort of stuff. Lots of food, but I would love to just be like cremated 100%.
Yeah,
burying is just horrible, man.
I mean, some people find burial very comforting. What do you think, sir? Burial, cremation, or you don't care?
I think I do care. I like what my mum was always very sweet about death. Like when her dad died, so she talked to us a lot about it. And what she always explained was that. Neither of my parents are religious, so she talks a lot about carbon and how and how we're all made of carbon. It's this really basic thing, and it can be hard like a diamond. And basically, my mum explained being burned as in like a way of freeing the carbon, so you go back and you become everything again. And then she's like, and then you're the sky, and then you're the water, and so I've always had the idea of like, it's this quick fire, and then boom, you're the world again.
You're everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always just grown up. My dad was cremated, and so I just kind of think. I quite like ashes, you know. I quite like the idea of having somebody in ashes, and you get to spread them rather than I'm also a bit claustrophobic, so the whole box thing. And yeah, I don't have a grave to visit. We didn't do that. So
have you ever wished that there was a place?
Yeah, sometimes, definitely sometimes, because I think I've told this story before on the show, but genuinely, he was Welsh, and my mum kept him in the wardrobe for 10 years. After he's dead, and not because he was Welsh, it's not connected. It's very small. You can pop him in, and when we finally went to spread his ashes in Wales, and I'm so yeah, how old I must have been? Oh, anyway, it's about like 17, 18, and we genuinely it was very windy, and we spread them, and it went in my face, and I got dad in my eye, and it was really, really funny at exactly the same time as being awful. Because, and if you've seen The Big Lebowski, that's the famous scene where he gets the ash face. Because my mum and brother were like, sort of wanted to laugh at me, but also like, oh, is she all right? And I was like, yeah, fine, it's just really misstuck. Like, that was like one bit. I think it's funny, don't worry, you can laugh.
As much as I love wannabe cremated, I do think the ashes situation is
tricky.
Unless you, because the last thing I want is to be on someone's like my wife's mantelpiece.
No, I think you want to be spread, don't you?
That's what I mean. I'd want it to be spread because you know there's people who just have it there.
Why don't you do like a baller move, like a little test tube full to all of the new comedians that year? Take a little bit of Darren Harriott.
You're welcome.
Good
you're
luck, welcome. Kids.
A little bit of Darren goes.
They could like carp. What is it? Like if it's carp, they could. Force it down into an award.
I think
put it in glass.
Other than like visiting the tombstones and the headstones or whatever, and I just know how that goes down over years. Where you know, I also didn't like so in a, especially in a lot of like Caribbean funerals, you have to like they give everyone shovels and then you literally just have to like throw the dirt. You have to do it until it's full. And to me, obviously, that takes ages, and everyone's really sad. So it really I always remember everybody. There would be about 5 shovels, and just they're just throwing dirt on my dad, and I'm like, it just I remember the like crane or whatever comes over and he goes, do you want us to just do it? And everyone's so angry, so what? And it's like, all right, fine. And I just remember thinking, oh, this is just too long, too painful, and you never forget. I always forget that. I always remember a few of the songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Just from and some of them I could hear it, and I'd be so sad. Because it just takes you immediately back.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever get snippets of it? There was a song at his funeral that a woman sang. So it was like a song she'd written herself. And every now and again, it just comes into my head. I like hear a bar of it. And I think it always takes me a while because I'm like, what's that? That's not it's the song for my dad's funeral. It's so weird. I would recommend that because then you don't hear it in shops because it's an original song. If you can have someone compose an original song for your funeral, I heartily recommend it.
Another thing as well about burial. Burying people that I fucking hate, that my family have done, is they did, so they did like, they put my dad, because obviously they lost their son, and they're, you know, obviously they're beside themselves. My nan died 10 years ago. She's buried on top of my dad.
Oh, right,
so they
yeah.
had they purposely had like a really deep grave.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just it really annoys me, but I'm in no position to be like, hold on a second, guys.
Why does it annoy you? Yeah. What is it bothering you?
Because I just felt like it was waking up my dad's
grave. Oh, yeah.
Next had to dig it up again.
Yeah, they had to dig it all up. My dad's tombstone's there, and it's purposely a big one with like his picture on it, and you could tell that they probably have put her there and him there. So then to have all these people back around my dad's...
Yeah, yeah.
And remember, we've got to dig it up and then throw the shirt. I really hated that. I understand why they did it. It's obviously it's their son, it's their oldest son, it's beautiful to them and all that. Yeah, but to me, it just felt like we were really just disturbing this whole
grave. That's interesting,
site.
Isn't it? That's the thing with burial.
Why don't we bury people standing up?
They do some places, don't they? I feel like that's come up before. And
I feel like that's a harder way to dig.
Yeah, but then eventually, if you did want to slot someone in next door, you see, that's easier then.
You've got to take your shoes off. You've got really big feet.
Like a filing cabinet. Just be like that one, then that one. I feel like somewhere does that, like Holland. My memory is very poor, but I feel like or maybe Japan, somewhere. No, they cremate in Japan. They cremate. That's the, like 0.01% of people are buried in Japan.
Was it the really sort of rough parts of China where they have the strippers at the funerals?
I
do not know this story.
They did an episode of No Such Thing as a Fish about it.
Oh,
getting strippers
it.
For funerals.
Ooh. I don't know how I feel
about
that.
I put it on my list.
That's the one thing your party needs.
Yeah. I mean, the strippers, they really go, they act like they're not at a funeral. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's what you want, because some people turn up to a funeral thinking, she wants me to have a good time, so I'll just pretend. When there's strippers there, do you know what I mean? You're going to have either have a good time or you'll be appalled, but you're going to forget about, hopefully, that, oh my gosh, she's dead, which is what I want.
Do you guys have the people who just turn up to funerals? They're just known to go to a funeral.
Oh, that's
you
a very big one. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, is that being gone as well?
Oh,
yeah, Jamaica.
Massive.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
My nan has so many of the, whatever they're called. My nan has so many. And it will be like, oh, that's a cousin of a cousin. Yeah. I didn't know him, but... what are you going to do? I've got to represent.
Because in Ghana, you advertise funerals, like in newspapers, like how you have notices in church papers or whatever. Yeah. And so people go for the newspapers and just rock up.
There's so many.
It's so interesting to hear that, because I think one of the fears for older people here who have a limited social, especially, or they've outlived lots of their friends and family, one of the things that makes them feel very sad is the idea of not having a well-populated funeral, because obviously having lots of people there shows a good life and that you are loved.
So you do,
they
you
would
do
love
get
the
that
idea.
You do get people turning up, so, but it's more of a, like, I think here it's more like if you go to that church regularly, there'll be one old lady that goes to all the
funerals.
But
it would be better if people just went, it's just a funeral, just going to sit there and hear about the person.
I know, it would be nice. Like, I was thinking, like, you know, that they sometimes do christenings on a Sunday at the church service. I think, why not whack a funeral in there at the same time? It's like, we're having the service and we're burying this person and we're christening this person.
Yeah. So goodbye to Arthur. Hello to Arthur.
Do you guys record your funerals?
Record them.
Yeah. Do you have someone? So, like at my nan's and my dad's, there's a hired person who walks around.
Oh, I don't think so. Like a wedding, like you would at a wedding.
Literally, like a wedding.
There were certain universal black things that just panic.
It was so off-putting to me, because I remember being at my nan's funeral. I don't remember my dad's one that much, like in terms of someone recording, but I was told there was. So somewhere there is a tape where I can literally watch my.
No,
dad's
I've never
service.
Seen that. Yeah.
But at my nan's, so it was 2009. I always remember there being a guy with. Like a big old camera.
VHS style.
But it's like, he literally looked like he was going, come on, give me more, give me more.
Oh
like
my
everybody
God.
On the front row, more tears, come on. Like he loved it. It was a big gig for him. So that whole thing is recorded. And I tell you, he's got some good shots.
When do you watch that though? When do you like, oh, what should we watch tonight? Titanic.
But a lot of it is to send to people.
Oh, I see.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, true.
Abroad and things like that.
That makes sense. Yeah,
yeah. So like a godfather of mine died. COVID related, and so they filmed his kind of his funeral, which was obviously very limited in attendees, which is even more important. Generally it's to send to people abroad, people who can't make the funeral.
So I attended a Zoom funeral during lockdown. It's the first time that I've ever obviously had to do something like that, and it was very strange. So I had a friend who died, again, too young, and they said, oh, we're going to send a link. And I was like, great, I'll just watch it on Zoom. So again, I had that complete duality of where we live at the moment in our technology. Part of me was so glad that I could see her funeral.
Yeah.
And I only knew her. She was a palliative care nurse, so I knew her through the grief world, but I got to hear stories about her being drunk at school, and I got to see her husband talking and her mum, and it was just, I really felt like, wow, I got to see this full person. And she loved sunflowers, so they had this coffin like absolutely bedecked in sunflowers. But then it finished and I was just in my bedroom.
two questions.
Yes.
First question is, did you feel the need to dress up? Did you wear all black? Or
anything? I didn't, but I did light a candle next to my laptop.
Okay.
And I felt stupid, but I was like, no, I'm going to do it anyway, because I felt like I needed to do something because I wasn't present.
Second question, yes. And this might be more important.
Okay.
How was the Wi-Fi connection? Because it would be strange if you see like someone getting like put into cremation and then it freezes and then you just see the little urn at the end.
My Wi-Fi connection, let me tell you, producers of Radio Comedy, is brilliant. It's nice. Absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
But I tell you what did happen was the service was late. So they did the Zoom live from like 2:30. So I was watching people doing their, like, chatting. Like, so the people, the head of celebrant and the people who ran the crematorium just having a chat, checking her name, laughing. Oh, is it said like that? Oh, I've never heard it. Oh, it's John, can you come in? Yeah. No, it hasn't started. It hasn't started. Yes, they're outside. And I was like, I felt so awkward. I was like, and they had said, like, if it's, when you went onto the website, it was like a funeral. It said, you know, if the funeral hasn't started, please be respectful and mute until it starts. I thought, obviously, I'm not muting this. Like, obviously, it's like being a little eavesdropper. And it was a bit weird because the angle was a bit weird. So like people's heads were like right in the way. And then they would move. And again, you'd be like glad of the view. And I was like, oh, what? A coffin? Why do I need to see the... But it felt like, yes, it was. But I did get to see it all very, very smoothly. I have to say, Radio 4.
That's the number one thing that would bother me.
Yeah,
even
yeah, yeah.
If, especially if it was a relative. Oh, choppy internet.
Yeah, no, it was all right. It was all right. So if cremation or burial, Sarah, have you thought about your last words? Because there's some, you know... I feel like as a writer, maybe you want to be prepping that sort of thing.
No, I know. I'd like the exact opposite.
Oh, you
I
don't
think
care.
So. Yeah. I mean, because also I'd like to be surprised by death. So I'd like it to be something really inappropriate.
Oh,
or,
I see.
Or something unfinished, so it's a mystery.
Ooh.
I'd really, really like a... Well, she worked like that. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That the would pin be code is 26.
Oh, I've worked it out. It...
Because you know what they could then do is a 20-part podcast series about what she was going to say. Like, definitely, someone could investigate your life.
Yeah.
Athena, any thoughts on your last words?
Oh, God, it would have to be something, like, overtly political. You know, it would just be like, God, money's not important. You know, or stop paying the council tax. Well, just stop paying it, guys. If we all stopped, they couldn't do anything about it, okay? Just stop paying it. No one's with me on that. I tried to start a hashtag. No one did nothing.
But you know what, Athena, if you die, people will get behind that, because they'll be like, oh, she's, oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It's actually one of her dying wishes that this GoFundMe campaign really kicked off.
But the GoFundMe is actually enough for all of our council tax. What should we do?
How would you feel about that? We use the GoFundMe to fund
absolutely
council tax?
Absolutely. Liberate the people.
Okay, okay.
All they do is empty the bins. That's it. Come on. It's too much.
It is a lot. Darren, have you thought about last words? I guess you have thought about last words, or maybe not.
Weirdly, never ever. This is the first time.
Oh.
Because I just don't, because I'm like so, I guess, horny for suicide.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just expect it to be so sudden. There would be no thought. There'd be no like sort of book. It would just be, okay, I guess I'm going to do it now.
So you wouldn't leave a letter?
Nah, I don't think I would leave. That's one thing I'm really glad that my dad never did, was leave a letter, because he could have said anything.
Yeah.
He might have said, oh, I love all the kids, but if he had schizophrenia, if he said like a crazy thing at the end, like, oh, I'll just run from that light, I'd be like, oh no, dad thought there was aliens. So I'm really glad. That's one, people always ask me about that, about suicide notes. I would never leave one, because I just feel like, especially if you leave a suicide note where, you know, you're like, this is my time, and I feel like that's even worse.
Then that
would have affected me a lot, because I would be like, there is a time where you just want to do it, and
that's
even
so
when you're
interesting, because I haven't been affected by suicide in a close network, and I've always seen suicide notes as a sort of comforting thing. But that's a classic example.
I think it's explanation. I think at least what then people go is, okay,
but maybe there isn't an explanation.
Well, of course,
you know?
Or it's even more frustrating.
Yeah. That's funny, isn't it? When things you haven't considered, because it's like when people say, oh, I've had people say to me, oh, you're lucky because it was it wasn't, he didn't just drop dead suddenly. So, you know, you get this time with someone, and I have to point out my dad refused to talk about it. Yeah. So, like, yeah. even if someone's dying of cancer, you know what? They might not give you that conversation. Unfortunately, that's up to them.
That must be so horrible.
Yeah.
To go through. I think that with my mum. My mum is so, I've said it before, I said if my mum ever got cancer, I would be the last to know. Because she would keep it all, just keep it all in. She wouldn't, she'd tell like my nan and like her sisters, but like I would be the last to know. Because she'd be like, you're in London, I didn't want to disturb you with it. And it would, I would make my, even thinking about it now, I fucking want to explode. just because I know she's, well, she would do
we
that.
We had a friend whose mum had breast cancer and didn't tell him.
Yeah.
And because she didn't want to worry him, and also it was a personal thing for her. She was going through it and she didn't.
Yeah, that's actually what I had with my therapist, just to plug them again. I'll give out the number. That I've always felt very frustrated that he didn't talk about it. And then she, and I had that child anger, because that's the problem when you lose someone young, you still react in that same child brain, because that's when the trauma happened. So I still felt very 15-year-old, like, why the fuck did he not fucking talk about it? And then one day she was like, do you think maybe he was just found it really difficult? And it had never occurred to me. I was like, oh yeah, maybe it was hard for him, because it's just, I was still in that child brain of like, fucking idiot, like classic dad, thanks very much. And I just hadn't occurred to me how it might feel to be the adult in that situation, which again is once you have children, you're like, oh, it is hard, isn't it? It is hard. They were right, it is hard. Have you thought about music though? Any other last songs?
I hate music.
You do, but no, that's not true. You like some.
Okay, they can listen to my run-in soundtrack. It's just Funky House from the 90s.
The only music that you actually like.
No, actually, that's all my music. I don't like any other music.
You've gone off them?
Yeah. I've finally gone off Take That. That's what she's trying to make me say. I don't like them anymore because I don't think they're nice people.
Oh, Sarah.
Sorry.
Oh, Take That.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're not. They're not. I did security for them.
That's big for you.
Yes. Okay.
Whole career is based around me and Take That.
I'm nearly 40 and I've decided I'm not in this just to meet Mark Owen anymore.
Can I just say that is a big change. That is a big change. From
lockdown has been big for everyone.
We've all been having big thoughts.
When Mark Owen made that song, that the one that he's like lead singer, the one and only
Clementine.
One. There we go.
Clementine.
Was that the one where he's like, take her out, nod your face.
No, that's with
Shine.
Shine.
I did security for them when I was doing their first tour with Robbie. And he really did Shine, that guy. He was so fun. He was him and Jason Orange, is it?
Yeah.
Real nice guys. Just putting it out there. They were really nice. I never got close to Robbie because Robbie's Robbie. And Gary Barlow was just, you know, somewhere just like...
So you're saying that Mark and Jason are the nice ones?
Really nice. They were really friendly to just
what
random
about the
security.
The one that got dreadlocks once? Was he nice?
Howard.
Howard, yeah. I just remember because...
Howard. Yeah, I forgot about him. He was actually all right. It was just that those two were just really friendly. They were like, hey, how you doing, buddy? You all right? You want a glass of water? And it was like, no. thank you, though. Like, they were just nice guys. I'm trying to get you back into them.
I think I am.
Did you
hear the bit where they were offering people water? They're rock stars. And yet they were
like, I saw your face. You're like, they're nice.
I know, so maybe I just don't like Gary Barlow. Okay. Maybe I just don't like Gary Barlow.
I think Gary is hot and cold, you know?
If you write back for good, you can do it for
good. He doesn't pay council tax.
Athena, yeah, he's that's tricky hero. For you. He did write back for good, but his tax issues. Oh, okay, that's... I'm still blown away by Take That, Sarah not liking Take That. Would you not even have one of the songs? Well, you need to write that down, because if you die and someone came to me and said, what will we play?
I would be like, Take That. I don't care.
Well, I'm playing the full
album.
You don't
know that you won't be there. There might be an afterlife. Might be there going, fucking hell, they're doing Erykah Badu. Like,
are we talking about Take That, like, they're now, like, the last, or the Take That, like, 5 years below? Like before, like 90s to like.
Also, I'm not having a funeral.
So oh, yeah, that's true.
I know what my nan wants for her funeral. She says it all the time. She says it as a joke, but she's 100%. She wants, is it Will Young? I think I better leave right now.
Yeah, oh. That's a brilliant song.
She said it so many
that's
times,
so
it's
going
to happen.
Yeah.
Like 100%. She said, when they carry me out for the burial, I want Will Young. I think, and you better have it on repeat.
So good.
Because I want it until I leave. Yeah, she's obsessed with it. Yeah.
That's good. That's very funny.
I knew two virgins who waited until they were married to have sex, and they walked down the aisle to Let's Get Ready to Rumble. And I think that kind of thing is appreciated by everyone.
Because it was their first time, there will be no rumbling. Like, but don't tell them. Don't tell them. Yeah, it'll be great. Ready. It'll be great.
Let's get ready to be disappointed.
So we're going to move. We have time for a little Q&A. So if you don't have a question, that's fine. Sometimes people don't. But if you do have a question, yes, we've got one over here.
What's your favourite movie death scene?
Oh, favourite movie death scene. Oh, I don't have a favourite movie death scene, but my favourite TV death scene, which I've said before on the show, is, this is very obscure for some people, there's a 70s show called I, Claudius. Do people remember I, Claudius? Thank you. It's just me and you. anyway, I, Claudius is based on a book, and it's like Game of Thrones, but in Roman times, okay? So it's based on actual things. And Brian Blessed, yes, you all know Brian Blessed, is in it. Brian Blessed, famously, you think, silly big actor. He does the best death scene I've ever seen. It's incredible. He's like there, and then he does that thing with his eyes where he's not there anymore. And I don't know what he's channeling, how he does it. It's incredible. And it's like proper BBC 70s, so it's just a really dodgy camera this close to his face. You probably can't even YouTube it. You just need to watch the whole of I, Claudius, available on DVD. We bought it from HMV. I'm sure that's still going. Anyone have a favourite movie death scene?
I've got two.
So, oh, good.
Yeah, a big one is Hans Gruber in Die Hard.
Where he's like,
Classic. And obviously, everyone who's my age probably gets quite emotional over Mufasa in The Lion King.
Oh, yeah,
It's, you know, it just, I was, up until then, I was a strong silent type. And it really released me from my, it's sad. It sounds like I'm being facetious, yes. But I'm
no,
really
I
not.
Remember. I remember watching it and being like, oh, yeah. they're gonna, he's dead.
And it's like he dies in like the first act.
Yes, yeah,
like.
Yeah.
So it's really like, oh my God, and it's a kid's movie.
They lulled right? you into that Disney sense of false security because you thought, it's Disney, they're not gonna die. That lion's not gonna die. And then they did, and you were like, what is this, Disney?
I'm very keen on kids, especially watching kids' programs now, kids' programs being real. Being showing life's rough sides and showing sadness and showing difficult emotions. That's actually quite a good example.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
It when you know, I reflect upon this as an adult at the time. I was like, move faster. But now I'm like, actually, that's quite a healthy thing to show in a kids' movie.
The generation before had that with Bambi.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's true. Like, oh my God, the Bambi! But I remember that. I remember being like, what?
Bambi one. So during lockdown, I watched Disney films every day. Because I'd never seen any of them.
Wow.
So I just wrote like mad reviews of Disney films. And when I put Bambi, everyone was like, oh, Bambi the death scene. It's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
No, but
I think
as a kid.
What you've been through is a lot worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, your standard is probably. No one's in prison.
Yeah. It was aimed at a different market, I feel, Darren. Yeah.
That's just a circle of life in Bambi.
Yeah.
But the Lion King one, I did find a little bit more like, aw. That's quite sad because he was really nice.
Yeah.
And then he comes back at the end. It comes back in the. I could literally talk about any Disney film for hours. Like I watched 55 in 55 days, so I know literally.
Did you watch Aristocats?
I watched Aristocats. Yes, I did enjoy. Aristocats is the one where it's set in the 90s, isn't it?
No. It's like set in Edwardian times in France.
I've got that mixed
cats.
Up with Oliver and Company. That's what I got mixed up.
Okay.
Oliver and Company is a ripoff of Lady and the Tramp. It's the exact same film, just done terribly. Aristocrats. The lead guy, the lead cat, is voiced by the same guy who did Baloo.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly right. Yeah.
And he's really good in it. I do like the relationship between the two.
It's good, isn't it?
When it comes to animals, in terms of cats and dogs, I would say Lady and the Tramp. Guys, I'm not fucking around. I legitimately know my shit. But yeah, Aristocrats was fun. I like when I go to the jazz band, everyone's just there.
Have you seen the Lizzo one?
Yeah.
That was good. I showed my daughter it is problematic, can I just say, if you do want to rewatch Aristocats.
Oh, is it?
There's some
Peter Pan is the most, worse than Bambi, worse. Peter Pan and what's the Pinocchio? Pinocchio's really bad. Because I thought it was just Mr. Geppetto, who was like the paedophile guy. There's a whole foxy singing a song about capturing kids and being paedophiles. Yeah. And then there's a guy at the end who turns them into donkeys, who looks like Boris Johnson, who goes, all we do is we capture kids. And he smiles and I went, this film is mental, but Peter Pan, probably the most problematic one out of all.
Oh, really?
Of them.
I haven't seen it for years.
Because, so basically, I literally keep calling the kids Tories because they're all just super Tory kids.
Oh, yeah.
And Peter Pan is the most unlikable hero you've ever had. Yeah. He's like, forget the young people, just do what I do, fly out a window. And then one of the little kids, he wears like a really long gown, he's the youngest one, he carries an umbrella. and wears a top hat.
Oh, yeah.
While he's flying.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, you're flying. You don't need to impress anybody else. Like, hello. And then they keep calling all the Native American people savages. Oh, who are these delightful savages? Why do they look like this? And I was like, this is a kid's film. Sorry, I could literally go off on Disney rants all day.
It's quite good because we got Disney Plus in a lockdown meltdown moment, and it does come up. And because I was like, I love Aristocrats. I haven't seen that. I said to my daughter, let's watch it. And then it said, does contain scenes that are culturally insensitive. And I was like, oh, okay. So I said, we can watch it. But I like, kept an eye.
I would say watch Lady and the Tramp. If that fails, just watch Zootopia today.
Any other questions here in the audience?
It's perfect.
There might not be. That's absolutely fine. Oh, yes. What age did I first attend the funeral? Or everybody. What age did I first attend the funeral? I first went to a funeral when I was 14, when my granny and granddad, my mum's parents, died just the year before my dad. I know, my poor mum. I was 14, I think. But actually, up until that point, no one had really died in my family. We had a lovely run, very calm, and then the world went, okay, your time is ready. Do you remember? How old
11,
you?
My mum's dad died when I was 11.
Yeah.
Athena?
I was really old. I think I was 28.
Wow.
It was my friend's mum, yeah. I have a really small family in the UK. It's me, my mum, and my two brothers. So that accounts for it, because a lot of the funerals we had in our family were abroad, so we couldn't go. So I was 28, yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was my dad's. I've only ever been to two funerals. My dad's in 2000, and then my dad's mom in 2009. That's it.
Yeah. Do any other questions, anyone? Yes.
Like you said earlier, Kaya, like you felt like you're looked and you heard your dad's voice. Mm. Do you believe that anyone visits you, or is it like once you're dead and it's
it? Yeah, it's a tricky question, because like, when I say I heard his voice, it definitely wasn't spiritual. It was like a memory. And that's what was so weird. It was like I just heard someone talking and I was like, that's what he sounded like. But I used to be very, very... he was here, I felt it. And now I'm like, well, where are you? I guess there's been definite points. I don't know what I believe. I'm definitely not on the absolutely no way. After he died, I don't know if you have this done, there were moments where it was like, I definitely sensed him really strongly. But that definitely didn't last very long. And my mum's theory is that like, she said, I think he hung around for a bit, but they don't hang around. They're not like, well, I'll see you in 3 years' time. What did you think about
that? So my mom, she's really big into all that sort of stuff. My mom went to this guy who sort of reads palms and like cards. And the best part about it was he is from like the Black Country, and it's where I'm from. And he would wear like a West Bromwich Albion football shirt it was just so weird. But then he would also give my mom the recordings back on a tape, an old school like tape. And my mom said something to me, so I never really ask her about it, because I feel like it's quite a private thing for her. She's asking not just about me, but about my brother. And she asked him about my dad. And because I always felt like I'd never really felt my dad's like presence in a way, because like my nan would always talk about, oh, my nan's very spiritual, my mom's kind of spiritual. And I was always like, I've never really felt like my dad's presence. And so I asked my mom what this guy had said, and this guy has a great track record. He really, he's got something, man. Or maybe my mom's just easy, just believes everything easy. But anyway, and he said this, and it always stuck with me, and I've never asked my mom ever again if she's been back. He went, my dad, he's kind of in this like realm where when you kill yourself, almost like a purgatory type thing, where he's not in hell, he's not in heaven, but because he is wherever he is, he's unable to make any sort of contact. Because when you kill yourself, you're seen as like, you're not seen as properly past. You're just stuck in this place. And he said to my mom that the reason why I haven't really felt anything from him is because he just can't. He's just not able to because of what he did. And that always stuck with me. And ever since then, I've never asked my mom anything again because I hated that. And I sometimes think about that sometimes. He's just that my dad is there trying to make contact, but he's just unable to because he killed himself.
This is my problem. My uncle saw somebody and they started telling me stuff. And I was like, the stuff you're telling me, I find so difficult because you're putting a kind of a human element on something that isn't there. They're like, oh, he's thinking this. And I was like, the moment you tell me that and he's worried, I was like, I can't deal with it. Yeah. I can't deal with him being, because the joy of death is they're not in pain. Like, they're not here. They're not suffering. Yeah. They're not worrying. They're not... it doesn't hurt. So when they sort of like, oh, they obviously, my uncle found it a comfort that it was like, oh, we're talking to him. And I was like, you know what? I find it very uncomfortable that he has any opinions or feelings about what I'm doing because he can't tell me. So yeah, I kind of erred on the, you know, if you're there, great, but you don't feel you have to talk to me.
my cousin who died last year, so she was incredibly spiritual, and it gave her great comfort to think that. So for instance, with her mother, who obviously was so distraught at losing her daughter, she said to her, I'm going to ride your back for 3 months. I'll be there 3 months, get you through the first three, then you're by yourself. Very spiritual. And I'm not at all. Unfortunately, she knew I didn't believe, and she was giving me crystals and stuff before she was passing, and it was like very important to her. And then after she died, I heard her in my sleep, in my brain, her exact voice going, ha ha, you were wrong.
Oh, that's good.
I know, and I told you, and I was just like, oh, she's talking to me in my sleep to prove that there is an afterlife.
It's literally stories like that that affirm my belief in it, because everyone's got them, and my mum has, due to age as well as many other factors, has lots of family members who've passed, and she's always been visited by them. It's almost like normal. And it's not just her, so. And lots of people don't have these experiences as well, but I just sort of think that there's something that's animating all this carbon. I don't know what the hell it is, but I don't believe it passes the same way that physical things pass. Mm. And it's weird because there's, you know, but that's what belief is. I can't evidence it.
I'd never come firmly on either side. I'd never be like, no way, because I do feel like if he is there, I want him to know. Yeah. He can. When he's ready, he can have a chat. That's fine. We've had some very nice
There was one above that's not on the screen anymore that I think
there was one
for
saying
Darren.
About coping techniques for losing someone to suicide. Darren, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. Obviously, it's a big question.
Coping techniques for losing someone to suicide. For me, it was, and it would probably be therapy, it was talking a lot. So, because I was unable to talk to my family about it, and especially my dad's family, never spoke to them really about it. I did comedy. I've always been very open. I've always talked to friends about it. Only now I can talk to my family more about it. Because I also feel like because they feel more comfortable in talking to me about it, just because they seem that I'm doing much better and I'm much happier in terms of what I'm doing. But I would honestly say just talk to friends and if you can talk to your family, talk to your family and don't be ashamed to bring it up. That's one thing that I went through for years. I just felt ashamed to bring it up because, you know, we're doing all right. We're moving on a bit and then just going, you know, oh, mom, you know, dad. Like sometimes I'll just ask my mom random questions about my dad. And it's never an issue. But I would have felt like 15 years ago, if I brought it up, I'd just be reminding her of this thing because obviously she feels like she played a role in it and she failed, and obviously she didn't. But now I'm very open. I mean, Dad, did Dad like this? You know, you met Dad. What was the music? What kind of music was you two listening to? Just little things like that. Yeah. And they're much more open to it. But I wish I'd done that like years ago because I think that would have also helped her.
Yeah, but I do think you only ask questions when you're ready to hear them. Like I definitely ask more stuff now because I think earlier I couldn't cope with the information. So I just would want to say it so badly and then would be like, I'm not going to. I just don't want to open that box, so I'm not going to say it. So I think I've definitely got to the position now where I'm, and also being a bit more of an adult, so able to ask adult questions about like their relationship and actually what, whereas at the time you're like, I just want to believe everything was perfect and I don't want to talk about it if it wasn't. Like that's it. We've had some other nice, I just want to read something from the stream. My mum recently passed, says Jake Howard. I want to talk to my family about her, but they really struggle. Any tips on how to start the conversation? It's kind of what you were just saying. I think the thing with starting conversations with family members is, and this comes up on the show all the time, is everybody grieves differently. And you have to respect that some people don't want to have that conversation. And that's the joy, to bring it back around, of therapy. You can find someone who is willing to talk to you.
I always think, because you could say to somebody, because what's difficult is if your expectation, what you need is not what somebody else wants. But I guess you could say, like, what do you want or need at the moment? What could I be doing for you that helps you? And they might go, shut up, leave me, or anything like that. I need some peace. But you could say, because what I need is this. And if you can't give that to me now, I understand. But you can still express it.
The thing with grief as well is that, I'm sure you have this down, it's like it's an ongoing conversation. So you might start trying to talk to a family member, it might be awful, and then 5 years later they might turn around and be like, hey, you know that conversation, this is what I couldn't tell you. And I've been amazed by like, oh, they weren't ready to have that conversation. So it's like, I think it's important to keep like knocking on the door with each other a little bit.
I also learned that there's there's other family members who are far more open and more comfortable with it.
True,
like I learned like with my nan and my uncles, their perspective of my dad, like I've never, the good thing is I've never heard any of my family ever say a bad thing about my dad. He wasn't a perfect guy, but they've never said a bad thing. But my mom, it's always quite a shorter conversation. And then I'll ask my nan, and my nan just doesn't care. She'll just say everything. And then I'll go up to my mom and go, Nan said, Dad didn't even really enjoy that Christmas dinner. Like, just something like, and then she'll laugh and she'll go, well, and then, so I realized that through other family members, it made it a lot easier. But like the past sort of 5 years, I could mention literally anything about my dad and it would be like fun. And obviously, I think that just comes with the time to heal, to heal from it a bit better. So now everyone's just open about, which is great, which is definitely what I need sometimes.
Yeah. What, you can say something?
No, I was just going to say that it's an opportunity to talk to family members that maybe you weren't as close to before.
Yeah.
And sometimes you might have a family member who you're close to and you feel like they're failing you, but as you said, like, they're not, they're just dealing with it in their own way. Like, I never had a relationship with my grandparents because, you know, they're abroad or whatever. But I have uncles and cousins who I'm very distant from, but there are people I talk to now over quite sad things that I would never have spoken to before. So it's an opportunity to, you know, if you have the luxury of a large family.
Yeah.
I think.
I think we have to wrap it up there. This has been so, so wonderful. I want to thank you so much for coming out to a gig in this incredible time that we're living through. We genuinely, it's been very nice for us to have microphones and people to speak to.
Guys, you are the real MVPs.
You are. Give yourselves a round of applause. Give yourselves a round of applause. Please give it up for Sarah Pascoe, Athena Colbedo, and Darren Harriott, who have been your guests tonight. I have been Carrie Lloyd. Thank you to the online. Sorry to the questions we didn't get to. Rachel, I know you did. I'm sorry about that. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks.
You've been
again.
Amazing.
Cheers,
thank you.
Guys.
You can follow Athena on Twitter at Athena Kublenu. That's Athena, and Kublenu is K-U-G-B-L-E-N-U. You can follow Darren on Twitter at Darren Harriott, and he's Darren, but Harriott is H-A-R-R-I-O-T-T. And you can follow Sarah Pascoe on Twitter at Sarah Pascoe. I think they're all on Instagram as well. And do check out their websites. They might have some things you can download or some specials you can buy, because comedians are not particularly working at the moment, so if you want to help them survive the pandemic, that's the one way to do it. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by the Glue Ensemble, and this episode was recorded live at King's Place in London, a fantastic venue who regularly support podcasts. Do look them up as well when they are back open. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.